Hey, welcome to the Meat House. Jeff here.
Chris here. Welcome back.
It is, man, it's still January. It's still cold.
It's still cold.
You guys probably hear, I'm still sounding a little rough like I was last week, getting over flu and all that happy stuff
around. If the weather would cooperate, you could recover a lot faster, man.
Yeah, right.
But my doctor gives me better meds. So, sorry.
No,
welcome back to the Meat House. Jeff and I have been talking a bit, and we thought, you know, there's more things about finishing we could talk about this week, and I think...
The recipe development, we did a really in-depth job talking fruit and spices and things like that, and we kind of...
Pretty good feedback on that. I liked it.
We were talking, you know, after that episode. You know, we didn't cover oak, and we didn't cover finishing.
No, we did not.
We cover kind of a lot between, you know, adding stuff and bottling, and...
We skipped a step.
We skipped a few things. I mean, I don't know if we're going to run a whole hour like we did last week, but we have a little more to talk about. So I think that's where we're going to start this week, and we'll see how far we can get that.
Okay. Now, as always, I'd like to thank our listeners. Absolutely. Appreciate you guys giving back time and time again. We'd love seeing those numbers climb. Tell your friends. Bring more people to the table. We'd love to have you here.
And we love the interaction, whether it's, you know, you just email, you comment on our Facebook post on the episode, or you know, however you guys reach out. We appreciate the interaction and just hearing, you know, what you guys are interested in. I don't know if we talked about this before, but it was... I think I mentioned it when we were getting ready to sit down for the Christmas episode, or it might have even been mentioned on the Christmas episode. I had a really fun interaction with a guy named Dave who was talking about how he had accidentally over-graped a mead he was making. Apparently he was using a grape concentrate you get at the store, mm-hmm. to make a grapey mead, and just way overdid it.
Okay.
The grape flavor, just too grapey, which... Yes, apparently you can make things too fruity, at least to his taste.
Okay,
I don't know if we would agree, but...
Getting maximum fruit is never my objective, so I suppose it is possible to go too far, but I've just never had that happen to me yet.
So he says he was using a couple pounds of honey, and then the rest of the gallon as juice, let it run dry and stabilize it, then back sweetened with a concentrate too, and it was way too grapey.
Okay.
So...
No water.
Then he brewed another batch with only a half a gallon of juice plus water, and back sweetened with half as much concentrate and half as much honey, and it was still too grapey.
Really?
So
his was plan, that a 1-to-1 water to grape on the first part?
I think a couple pounds of honey, rest of the gallon is juice.
Okay.
So no, just straight up water. But he said he was taking it like a page from how he does cider or cider.
Okay, I've never done cider, so, you know, you got me on that one, buddy. So, I'm sorry you overfruited grape. I mean, I'm kind of surprised you can, because I'm a huge fan of fruits and such like that.
Well, the long and short of it, he made a traditional mead and blended.
Okay.
And he finally got it to a level that was useful.
So. Good to hear. I'm glad that worked out for you, man. If you have anything else you want to say about that, man, I'd love to hear how you did your traditional. What percentage it was, what you did with that. Thank you for that feedback. That was awesome.
Yeah, we'd love to hear stuff like this. And, like, you know, you and I have talked so many times. I'm not sure you can overfruit a mead. No, I've read his report. But
apparently. Well,
you know, and maybe it was like a, I could see if he was using like a Concord grape juice, the Concord flavor can be a little too sweet, a little.
That can be kind of strong. I agree.
You know, maybe it's just a too strong a fruit flavor and not necessarily too fruity, but. You know, that I could see how you could get into that. There are unpleasant aspects of that. So,
well, you know, I'll buy that. I will tell you, for the first time ever, I finally, you know, overcome my fears and decided that I'm going to make a 10-gallon batch of my Black Grape Vanilla.
Nice.
Instead of my standard 7. But since I usually use a gallon of the Vintner Blackberry juice.
Yeah, the concentrate.
Please. The concentrate. I'm going to put 2 gallons in this batch, which is just wildly over. I mean, having 1 gallon out of a 7-gallon batch, mm-hmm. being the syrup, the concentrate, now I'm doing 2 gallons in a 10. So you can do the math there and see how that could.
That is a more concentrated amount. Yeah. By a margin.
And I want to see how that works out.
I think it will work out well.
But, you know.
You think about it. Each of those gallons is supposed to make a 5-gallon batch. You're just adding honey and diluting it a little bit to
to fill it up the rest of the way. Yeah. Right.
To make what is in the end a higher ABV beverage anyway. But
yeah, yes. But this time I'm adding, and I did it for a 7 gallon, not a 5 gallon.
Right.
So even then it was lower in fruit intensity than it, than they, that it's made for.
Right, right. You're making up the difference by adding honey.
This time it's going to be the same, what they actually, this is going to be 2 gallons for a 10 gallon batch.
With honey.
With honey. And away I go.
We'll see how this works.
This should be interesting.
I doubt you're going to have a failed experiment here, but it's worth, you know.
With a 10 gallon batch, I really hope it's not a failed
experiment. Right, that's 10 gallons off. Even the honey going into 10 gallons is not a small amount of
no,
honey.
No, that's, you, if you hear me cry and bulbering on the phone, you'll know.
Okay, well, you know, guys, thank you for writing in, for interacting with us, for just tuning in and listening. Even if you don't, yeah, hey, I am an introvert through my core. I don't necessarily want to talk to anybody on the day-to-day. And, you know, I totally understand that impulse myself. But
I have no idea what that is.
Tuning in. I mean, you don't. But you guys are tuning in week after week. We appreciate that so much. Yes, we do. The other group of people, as always, we need to thank our Box and Barley Corn.
Box and Barley Corn has always been there for us and from the very, from before the very beginning. So really appreciate their efforts. Mm-hmm. They have the passion, the knowledge, and the equipment and ingredients you need.
Right.
For everything.
The local homebrew store, if you are unfortunate enough to not have a local homebrew store near you, they've got you covered. You can get it shipped to you and use our discount code
MHP10
to get 10% off your order. Their prices are already pretty competitive. That's just sweetening the pot, letting them know that you're listening, that you're getting value out of their contribution to keeping us online, keeping the Mead House episodes on the internet where you can find and access them at your convenience. So
if you're looking for like beer or wine, not mead, they got that. Mm-hmm. Kombucha, cheese, yogurt.
If cider.
It ferments, cider. Yeah. If it ferments, they got it, guys. There's something that you're going to love.
So, this week, mead of the week is a blackberry mead from Apigard. And for once, we get an Apigard mead without a Germanic or Norse name that I
bless
will struggle
their,
to pronounce. It's just a blackberry mead.
Bless their capitalist heart. At least it made it possible for me to pronounce the dang thing this time because I couldn't do it.
Blackberry. Oh,
so stop! Don't do that. All right. Well, as you're pouring here, I'm gonna tell you, it is berry. It's that
it is
purple
a
red,
very pretty, deep red color, kind of a ruby color.
Mm-hmm. Very impressed with it so far. It's
this is not a bottle that's been sitting around on a high shelf for the better part of a year.
We still finished that bottle last week, man.
We did.
It was still good enough to drink, so I'm not mad.
Yeah, it was every part my fault and not anybody else's fault for not drinking it faster. But
well, I'm glad I helped you correct that situation. Okay, the smell is pretty darn good. It's that deep, dark, berry, mm-hmm. red, purple.
Yes. You know, you almost have to hold it up to the light to get the color on it.
Yeah.
It's that dark of a color. And you're right, there is a, you know, my nose is still stuffed up from
the you can smell it?
Flu, but I'm still getting some measure of that blueberry,
blackberry.
Yes, blackberry. You're right. I'm wrong.
That's okay. You're getting over the flu.
And speaking of smelling, we need to drop a pin and say, hey, Valkyrie's Horn's coming up.
Oh, it is coming up. It's not a little later this year.
Yes, it's in March instead of February, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But they are looking for volunteers. They are looking for entries. So, Chris and I have been promoting this basically since we got this podcast back up and started. I dragged him 2 years ago, I think, and we've been enthusiastic attendees since then. So
yeah. Join me as a steward. I'd love to meet you. Come on and help us out. I mean, it sounds silly, but being a steward, the job is you're going to take the mead to the judges, pour them in little cups and take them to the judges. Not hard. It's a little bit of work out there. A horrible amount of fun.
It is. And honestly, one of the friendliest communities of people that are all really interested in mead. You'll get to meet people from all around the country. There are people that own their own meaderies that are just, you know, mead nerds like me and Chris here, coming from all over the place to, you know, sit and judge and talk mead and hang out. Nicest group of people you've ever
and
met.
Learn something. It's just right. Cool there, man.
The education is always top notch. I enjoy the hell out of it. I mean, cannot in cannot be more enthusiastic about. You guys should get involved. And if you have the ability to come out and, you know, get a hotel room, hang out, the judging information, judges, like, info page on their website. I'll shoot a link in the show notes so you can find that. It tells you where the hotel's going to be at. That's an important piece of information to know for the bottle share.
Yeah, at the end of the first day, we come down with our bottles and, hey, try this. No, a good time is had by all.
And we made the mistake the year before last of staying somewhere other than where the competition hotel was.
Yeah.
I had to drive home. Again. That's just dumb.
Yeah, I'm not going to make that mistake again. But yeah, come and join us. You know, say hi. Tell you know, walk up, say, hey, you're Chris, you're Jeff. Hey, yeah, I heard you on Meat House. Love to meet you.
Yeah.
Be awesome. But, and it is in, I looked it up, it is in March this coming year.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to get your signups soon, as soon as possible. They've already opened it up to sign up, get it done.
Yeah. Registration opened back in December. So, you have a deadline to get this shipped to the competition by, it looks like, February the 27th. And the same is for local drop-offs as well. So, you know, they are giving themselves about 3 weeks to get through, sorted all of their entries, which is smart on their part.
Yeah, it's still a lot, guys. What was it, 700 bottles last year?
I could have been, entries easily, yeah.
Okay, I shouldn't say bottles. It's 700 entries, which is two bottles apiece.
If not three, yes.
If not three. It's a lot, guys. So, you know. And we would love to have the help, and we're going to have a lot of fun. Join us. It's going to be great.
And bear in mind, even if you don't, if you're not interested in participating, you can't make the trip down to Minneapolis, but you've got a couple beads you're interested in getting feedback on, this is a great competition to get that feedback. This is a huge competition. There's a lot of very good judges with a lot of good information. So you can definitely get some good feedback for your mead, even if that's all you're interested in doing. So, yeah, absolutely happy to plug that resort.
Yeah, loved it.
100%.
Okay, now back to the meat we have here, the blackberry meat from Oppengard. Oh, hard berry flavor. Love that.
Oh, and that's a nice little sour bite at the end, too.
Yeah, very nice finish on that. That is, okay, not over-fruited to me.
It's very fruity.
Very,
it's not
very
sweet.
It's not sweet.
I'm kind of on the fence as to whether I would call that semi-dry or, you know, semi-sweet.
I'd call it a little bit closer to dry than sweet, but it's still sweet in there.
I think with the acidity and the tannin, it kind of, it mellows the sweetness quite a bit.
Seriously. Really, it coats the tongue with that berry flavor. And mm-hmm. the back of the mouth is where you hit that sour note, and it's really nice.
And usually when you have something with a sour finish like that, it comes off as crisp. The flavor is just like, it's done.
Yeah.
But this is not that case. The flavor kind of lingers. It's nice. It just kind of hangs out there. It's a nice bottle. I'm enjoying this. Yeah. So,
I mean, if you haven't tried an Oppengard mead, if you can order it or something in your area. I've had very few bottles I didn't really like.
Yeah,
they're good.
They do a lot of very fruity meads that are very nice. I'm consistently liking what I'm pulling out of the box from them.
Yeah. And anyway, so, and we thank our listeners.
We thank Bacchus.
We thank Bacchus.
We did, right?
Yes. And oh, yes. And last week we had the drawing. We talked about the drawing.
That's right. Yes.
Jay, make sure you got us your contact information for Flavor Bible. And I haven't checked the emails recently, so if you sent it, I'm just following up. And Jason, for your Beadmaker's book.
The Complete Beadmaker, yeah.
Yeah, The Complete Beadmaker. Yeah, same. You know, get us your information so we get you your books. And everybody else, you're going to get something. I promise.
Yeah, I've got to hop into the Beadmaker. Got to hop into the email and see if we've got replies from them so you can get those books out.
So, you know, we will contact, I think, Jeff, you contacted them already?
Yeah. I shot them an email a little while back. I want to say it's probably been a couple of weeks ago now by the time this actually comes out. And we may have even gotten a response between when that came out and when that episode got edited. And I just haven't, you know, sat down and
gone through the emails. But, you know, if you have sent it, I'll say as soon as we get your email and get your information, we will send it. Keep tuned. More stuff's coming.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Finishing and oaking and all the other stuff we did not hit last time.
Right. Because, you know, we spent an entire hour talking about stuff and somehow we still missed stuff.
Like that never happened before, right?
So let's talk oaking, because oaking is, we did an entire episode on oaking. It's a topic all by itself.
Yeah, it really is.
And
There are so many choices.
right, there are a lot of choices here. So let's kind of try and narrow some stuff down. When we talk about oak, generally speaking, we can talk about different species of oak, and we can talk about different toast levels of oak, and we can talk about do we really need to oak in the first place? And
The short answer, do you have to oak? No.
no.
Do you want to oak? Probably.
And do you absolutely need oak in every mead? No. But you can do a lot with oak without giving your mead an oaky flavor.
But yeah.
Even a week on some, for example, some medium plus or medium toast oak can help build up a tannin structure that it doesn't taste like oak. It's not like you're drinking an oaky red wine or a whiskey or something like that, but it adds a little bit of that mouthfeel and kind of blends other flavors together. It'll mute a little of the acidity just by contrast. It can be very nice.
I likened it to when I talked to Jeff about this at one point. It's not going to change your flavor. It's what it's going to do is give you the scaffolding to taste the flavors and make it more structured and a little bit better that way.
Right. So I am a fan of adding a little bit of oak to most of what I make. But
I've added oak to very little of what I make in contrast, but I've never had a bad oaking experience by the same note.
Right. So when we talk about oak, there are basically three different species of oak we can talk about, although there are some fun extras we can talk about too. But American oak tends to be a little heavier on vanilla and a little like, for my taste, and this is subjective, this is my opinion and not the even necessarily the overall opinion, but it tends to come off a little harsher. The pores of American oak are more open, so you get a faster process from the American oak than you do any other species of oak.
And after we talk about the American oak, and I've talked about these three types of oak, I'd like to talk about how you present them in the meat. Okay.
For sure.
Anyway.
So you get American oak tends to be very vanilla forward and very, you could get a lot more of the toasty character and a lot more of that kind of bourbony note to it, because obviously American oak is where bourbon comes from.
Yeah,
The
that's what they put it in the barrel.
bourbon is required to be made in first use American oak barrels.
Yes.
So that character is kind of writ large with American oak. French oak, on the other hand, is the pores tend to be smaller. It
Yeah,
tends to take longer to process.
it's a little bit lighter.
It is lighter in flavor. I still get a pronounced amount of vanilla from it, depending on how long I'm letting it sit. But you also get kind of some small baking spice notes to it, and it is generally my favorite for approaching oaking, although I've started playing with Hungarian oak, which is the next one we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Hungarian oak has a more spicy, bakey spice profile to it.
And we're talking about medium oaks right now, medium
Well,
toasted oaks.
generally speaking, yeah, you'll get this character from all of them, but medium is where it's most apparent in the kind of the midpoint.
Now, and just to go over this, there is a light, medium, and dark toasted
Right.
oak for any of these.
Or sometimes
Absolutely.
instead of medium, they'll call it medium, or I'm sorry, instead of dark, they'll call it medium plus. But yeah, that's
It's dark.
if it's more than medium, it's probably dark.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll also see there are a few different like companies making oak products like the staves or the beans or what have you, and they will some of them are making a toast level that is being marketed as like vanillin or a word that sounds like vanilla, a word that sounds like cocoa or cinnamon, because they are toasting it at a level that particularly enhances those flavors,
Characteristics, yeah.
whether it's vanilla or cocoa or baking spices and things like that.
Well, I'm going to back off the medium for a second, unless you want further on the medium. Okay. I'm going to do the light toasted, the mild toast, which I generally can mix more floral content
It
in
can
many
be a little more
ways.
floral. Some people note, especially like American oak, it can give you an almost kind of a coconut flavor, I've heard.
I hadn't heard that, but I'm
I've
glad to
not
hear it now.
experienced that, but a lot of people swear by it. So,
I like the concept, but I don't Since I don't oak very little, I'd have to defer to you on that one.
Conceptually interesting. Yes, American oak, a little harsh for my taste. I'm kind of, I have misgivings about whether or not I want to push and try that, but it's conceptually interesting.
That's
It's
super.
different.
Okay. But, and a light toasted French oak, would that be even more floral or would it be?
That would it'd be more on the floral side, a little bit more on the lighter baking spice kind of notes. I would think the same with the Hungarians.
Okay.
When you get into the heavier toast, whether we're talking like heavy toast, dark toast, or medium plus, what have you, then we get more into the
Smoky,
right. There's a little smoky
earthy.
notes, a little darker baking
The
spices and things like
more
that.
for American, we need it would be more bourbony.
Yeah, a little, you might even get like some molassesy notes to it. Just
Okay, that the molasses. I couldn't think of the word molasses, so yeah.
right. Yeah. We're talking the little bit more, as you would guess, like caramelized or the Maillard reaction kind of flavors you would expect from, hey, we took this oak and we charred it darker.
Yeah, and I couldn't, maybe Jeff could. I can't tell you about what temperatures they. I think it's the amount of time they toast it for the most part.
It's a combination of time and temperature.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, like when you toast coffee, light is lighter, dark is darker or heavier.
You will get different notes depending on the species and the time you do it, the process you do it. I know some people will take like light or not toasted oak and just toast it in their own oven for S&Gs. And that's more effort than I want to go to. But
Yeah.
if that's the level of control you want with your hobby, cool.
Go
I'm
for
happy
it.
for you.
Now, I did want to talk about the methods of introduction. Okay, you can throw a block of oak, toasted oak. You can get them.
Yes.
You can get a chunk of toasted oak and toss it in your fermenter or whatever for these. It takes longer. We're talking about surface area.
Yes.
The more surface area you get, the faster this process goes. Does it change the flavor or structure? Not really. We're talking about time at this point.
Right. The realistically, would it change flavor if you were using, sapwood versus heartwood or the bark layer? Yeah, that would change the difference. But
Yeah.
everything you're going to find in your homebrew store as far as an oak product is going to be basically the same. It's just the format has been changed to allow more surface area contact.
Now we've seen several. We've seen chips, beans, cubes.
Well, beans and cubes are all basically the same thing.
Really?
They're
Okay.
little blocks, but
Okay.
they call them beans. I don't know why they call them
I
beans.
saw some look like pebbles, small pebbles at one point. I thought that was a bean.
I've never seen them rounded off like that. It wouldn't surprise me if that's a thing somewhere, but that seems like an unnecessarily more complicated manufacturing step
Okay, so
when
that's
they
the same
could
thing.
just, put it into the choppy blocky thing and
Okay, that's fine.
do
But I've seen like the bean. I thought that was beans because they look like little beans.
Yeah, no, we call them cubes beans
Okay.
or the little blocks or whatever you want to call them.
We've also we've seen shavings and we've seen blocks,
Yeah, chips,
chips,
and of course barrels.
and of course, but we've also seen last year back we saw honeycombed.
Yes, and that's there are some of these that are not quite, it's not a barrel, but it's a little bit more larger format. So you've seen like the spirals where they have a
Well, I forgot about spirals, yeah.
they'll carve a spiral channel down it. The honeycomb is kind of the same idea, or some people will literally just take a single stave from an old used barrel and throw that in a fermenter. So you get the charred inside and the outside. That's another way to do it. For the
Okay.
longest time, that was how you got Hungarian oak at Bacchus. That was the way they had it. But now they've got it in, the same like beans and chips and spirals and stuff format as everything else. No,
But
there's a bunch of different ways to do this. And obviously, the more surface area you've got, the less contact time you need. If you're doing the chips or the shavings, which can be very fast,
yeah,
and you don't necessarily want to
like
do that all the
a
time.
day or two can push it.
Plenty, yeah. The usually I use the chips or the not chips the cubes or the beans like we were talking about, the little blocks of wood. That seems to be a good middle ground for me as far as I can leave that for a couple of weeks. I can usually get the amount of flavor I'm looking for, or I can redose with a little bit more to get it pushed where I want to go without overdoing
Now, I want to say, oaking is not like spices. It's not, because if Jeff was to leave, now I know this because I listen to Jeff and others talk about oaking. That's why I have any input at all of this, because I don't do it that much. If you were to leave spices in for over a couple of weeks, you're going to get those green vegetable things like we talked last week. Oaking is not the same.
You can get vegetal flavors. You can get off flavors.
It just takes longer, as far as I understand.
Oak is a little bit more stable in that regard, but you don't want to leave oak too long. You do still want to, the same way that if you don't have the flavor after a certain amount of time, you want to pull something and pull the oak and add more oak, for example. You just got more time with it than spices. And I think I've said 2 to 3 weeks previously. That's a little conservative on my part. You can probably let it go 4 to 6, but I at 2 to 3 weeks, I'm usually checking to see, okay, is this approaching where I want oak level? If not, then I'm thinking about fresh oak because I'm willing to spend a little bit more on some beans or another half a spiral rather than risk overdoing it and getting nasty stuff sitting in there. I've had that happen too many times. Go, oh, okay. Well, I should have just refreshed
And
this.
something that was I was re reminded of by my wife last week is the cocoa nibs I talked about last week. If they're floating, they're done.
Yes.
They are com
That's usually if I have cocoa nibs, I've got them in a bag and I've got them submerged, so I don't really think about it like that. But that's I'll
But they
take your
will
word for
float
it.
up. The bag will float up with it too, because it does it with me.
I've put weight in it, so it'd be
Okay,
okay.
I do that with everything else.
Yeah, I'm fine.
But if they're floating, they're probably done. But okay, now going back to oaking, is I know the answer to this, but I'm going to say it as if I don't.
Yes.
Can you use anything other than oak?
You absolutely can.
Yeah,
There are,
I know this answer because I've seen this done.
well, and we talked with Last Valkyrie's Horn, throwing that out. They had a gentleman there with the kind of the new thing that they're talking about these days is Amburana, which is a, I can't remember if it's a Brazilian species of oak or if it's closely related to oak, but not oak, but it's something that is being used in place of oak. And it has interesting flavor profiles. I've seen some people do really cool, interesting things with it. By the time I got to try it at Valkyrie's Horn, I wasn't that impressed because I think I was also just my palate was kind of burnt
Burned
out at
out,
that
yeah.
point.
It's easy to happen out there.
But I think we had something with Amburana from Sap House a month or two later, and I went, "Oh, that's got some interesting notes to it that I enjoy." So, am I like jumping to use it at every turn? Not really. Am I willing to consider it and maybe try some weird stuff with it with my copious amounts of free time?
Stop.
Yes. Yes, I am.
But
Am I
I've
being sarcastic about having copious amounts of free time? Yes. Yes,
yes,
I
we
am.
are. I mean, Jeff has a job and I'm retired. I thought I'd have more time. I was so naive, so naive. But there's other things I've seen used. Maples, sugar maples.
Sugar maple is another popular one. So is it cedar? No, cypress.
Cypress, yes, I've seen that one.
Cypress is one that comes up quite a bit too. These are all the thing about these, there is a reason that oak is kind of the king for a wood that flavors a spirit. Whether you look at whiskey or bourbon or French wines or Italian wines. Oak is what they're using for those flavors, and there's a reason. It's just the easiest and the most stable of them. With any of these, whether it's sugar maple or the cypress or what have you, you have more chance for some of those, like the off flavors, the weird, like vegetal notes and things like that. But they have their own interesting, extra things. The sugar maple obviously has kind of a sweet note or undertone to it. It's obviously not as strong as oak by any means. Cypress can have some weird, like spicy, kind of almost cinnamon or ginger notes, if I remember right. I could be
I
wrong on that,
don't
but there are.
I was in severe burnout when I tried it at Valkyrie Horn, and I haven't had a chance since, so.
It's an interesting angle that's worth investigating to my own mind. I just haven't had an opportunity to do it much because, this is the final flavor combination after a lot of flavor combinations. So to my mind, if I'm going to experiment with some cypress aging, I almost have to have something that I've already like pre-made with the intention of cypress aging it, And I just haven't had a flavor combination that maybe, and that's the one. That's the one that I want to try over these other six ideas that are burning in my mind.
But I just called a quick thing up on my search engine here. Cherry.
Yes, cherry's a popular one. Walnut, maple, hickory, I've heard of people
I've
use
heard
them.
hickory. I
Yeah.
hadn't heard of walnut until now.
And I kind of have to wonder, like, could we just go to the barbecue aisle in like Feldman's farm store or the Home Depot, and they've got the chunks of wood you put in a smoker. Could we?
And they're minimally processed simply because, they're not supposed to get anything other than the wood smoke going. So
And
yeah, I'm thinking that's why it couldn't work.
well, and we might want to toast. I have to imagine, yes, they're minimally processed. They're probably not toasted at all. So
No,
we
probably not.
probably have to toast them in our oven or grill or something like that. But that's a possibility. That might be worth experimenting with. The chances of us accidentally producing a good mead all by ourselves first time.
Low, low.
No, that's just probably not going to
We
happen at all.
are not so arrogant to say we. Oh, this will be awesome! And no, we're. I'm hoping it's drinkable.
Yes. Will we learn a lot and have fun? Yes.
Yes.
And that's really the motivation there.
Yeah, I am all in on that one.
So that might be worth trying just for an S&G's kind of an experiment this spring, summer, once it warms up a little bit and we've got some time to sit around and do some stupid things.
Okay, next question. I'm going to say, like, I don't know the answer. Can you combine the woods?
Oh yes.
Yeah, I knew. Again, I know these answers, but
Yes.
I want these questions out there.
Well, and this is one of the things that like I mentioned, I've been playing a little with Hungarian. I've been mixing Hungarian and French, and it literally is a little bit of a best of both worlds. You get some of the spiciness from the Hungarian, you get that stable, nice, rich, round, oaked character from the French. So yeah, you can absolutely. And the cool thing is, there are a bunch of different ways besides even the ones we've mentioned nowadays to add oak. There was a company, I don't know if they're still around, but I think I've seen them even at Bacchus. It was like Badmouth Barrel or something like that, where it's a stainless steel vessel, but it has an oak face. And
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
so basically the idea is, whether you're doing like a mead or a wine or a distilled spirit, it's a smaller format barrel. And so you can
It's
a
like a gallon, isn't
right it's like
it?
a gallon or something very close to that.
Yeah.
It might be like 4 liters or 5 liters or something along those lines. But the idea is, so if you have a 5 gallon barrel versus a 55 gallon barrel, the aging that happens in that barrel is so much faster because there is the volume versus the surface area of the barrel is diminished significantly, right? And so like what would normally take a couple months in a 55 gallon barrel to achieve, like when I was doing a sizer in one of those, I got and then some blew out of the water in like 2 weeks.
Jeez, that's
It,
fast.
yeah. And so the advantage of these guys is that just having that one face over the rest of the volume reduces the volume that you're oaking. And so it's a little bit more along the lines of that 55 gallon, where you can take your time with it and just let it develop naturally rather than just letting it blow out of the water in 2 weeks while you're not even paying attention to it. But the way that they were doing it at one point, they had like something like three or four different staves across this face. And so you could mix those with different toast levels or different species or things like that at your request. And I don't know if they still do that or if they've.
I saw it not horribly long ago. They might, if they don't have it, they probably have access to it.
Right. But I don't know if the manufacturer is still doing it in the first place is the
That's
other
going to be
question.
our preface for everything we say about any manufacturer, simply because
Right.
this is a fairly tough industry
Yeah,
for the hobbyist.
well, added to the fact that the guy that I had initially heard about this from was Jesse over at the Still It YouTube channel,
Yeah.
and he's working out of New Zealand. So their availability and our availability here stateside, totally
Vastly
different.
different,
Yeah,
vastly different.
yeah.
Okay, now I'm playing the interviewer here a little bit. We've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. If you're whatever you're doing, whether it's a single strain of wood in whatever medium, chips, cubes, blocks, spirals, whatever, take notes.
Yes.
This is important because if you're gonna do it again, you need to know, was it a 2-inch spiral of oak, of Hungarian medium toast oak? All those things are important. Or is it a two-inch spirals of light French oak? These are gonna make very vastly different results.
Me as a mead maker that's fairly experienced, I can trust my instinct is to say, okay, so with this, with my wife's Sangria mead we talked about in the other episode, for example, when we were talking about developing recipes and, finishing things and things like that. I'm probably going to put a little French oak on this. Not a lot. She doesn't like oaky things, but it helps round out the flavors and helps develop them. So I have the instinct to go, okay, French oak. That's the one I want to do. It's going to be a little spice. It's going to be a little tannin, but it's not going to be strong in any one direction. It's not going to be extremely vanillin and harsh like an American. French is the one I want, and I probably want a medium toast because it's in that nice medium range where, again, I'm not looking for a lot of flavor, but it's going to just build structure around it, right? And so that's one of those things you figure out from doing this a few times. As you're figuring that out, that's when those notes help. Because
And because I don't do this a lot, I'm making notes, copious notes.
even when you know this, you still take notes. Like maybe, you're doing French oak for the sixth or seventh or eighth or 10th, 12th time. You still want to record what you did, because if you did anything different than your usual, modus operandi on making mead, and something happens that it's just not right,
You know why?
you got to be able to backtrace and say, okay, well, I made a mistake this time, clearly. What do I do to not do that in the future?
Or even more heartbreaking, if you don't take the notes and you made something magnanimously better, that you did, this came out really, really good. Okay, you better know what you did, or you're never going to see it again.
Yeah, you will be chasing that improvement for ages, and you may never reach it.
So, but we've said it before, and we'll say it again: notes.
Notes,
But
notes, notes, notes.
I don't know what else there is out there for woods, but if it's a flavor, if you find, okay, in the Midwest we have barbecue,
Yes.
in the States we have barbecue. If it's a barbecuable wood, you probably get something out of it. Oak is the king. It's not the only option.
Right. Oak is far and away used extensively for this purpose because it has proven itself across time and culture to be very useful for it. But it's not the only one. I'm willing to bet that we could do some interesting stuff with cherry wood or hickory wood or something like that. And
Cherry wood intrigues me, I'll be honest. That one intrigues me.
honestly, I'd be willing to hear out apple wood too.
Ooh, I didn't think about that one. That's
But
good.
those fruit woods that have a little bit of fruit character to them, in addition to the woody character. And the woody character might be a little too vegetal and harsh. It might be a short contact time, but I think it might be worth trying.
And on that note, if you're going to just fruit woods, there's a bunch.
Yes, there are quite a few. That said, hardwood is also intriguing to me.
Cottonwood is also intriguing. So that's just a basic. Okay, again, as Jeff said earlier, we could go into multiple episodes about oaking
Yeah,
by
we're
ourselves.
already halfway into this episode, and all we've been talking about is oak
Oak.
and finishing and stuff like that. We should probably talk about some other finishing steps that are kind of in that adjacency. And one that comes to mind is, like, I don't know if you've been shopping around like the all the little shelves and widgets and what's it's on Bacchus. I don't know if they still have it, but at one time they had like a wine conditioner kit. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that, but every time I go, I don't use them on, I don't look at those things online. I'd rather be there.
Yes, same.
But I always try to peruse, see if there's something I haven't seen. And in all the years I've gone, I've never failed to find something new.
There, the mindset you're in when you go in there, every time you're in there, you're thinking about something different. Different stuff will catch your eye, and
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just the nature of a shop with a lot of different stuff in it. But in that same area where they had like the super clear and things like that, for the longest time when I was working there, they had a product that was just called wine conditioner, and it was a, if I memory serves, it was a two-part product, not unlike
You will find.
the Dual Fine, except one of those was just glycerin.
You told me about glycerin last time we
Glycerin is
talked.
a, you want to use a food grade vegetable glycerin,
Of
obviously,
course.
because glycerin, I think if I remember right, you can also use it as like a lubricant, or like I've heard of people using it to like, the little suction cup, you stick a thermometer or something on your back window so that you can know what temperature is outside. If those are having problems sticking, apparently you can use glycerin to like
So,
lubricate the
food grade
suction
glycerin
cup.
is important.
It should be food grade. There are a lot of things you could use glycerin for that are not food grade, but apparently food grade is important. That said,
because I'm drinking it for one.
Yeah, there we go. This
There's
is
number one on the board.
Consuming. Yeah. But apparently you can use it in small amounts to increase like the body and the mouthfeel of the mead and give it a little bit more of like a thicker, heavier body taste. So if your meads are feeling like not necessarily flabby in that lack of acid dimension, but kind of light and meh, you can add a little glycerin to it to give it a little bit more heft in the feeling in your mouth.
Does it make a heavier feel?
Yes. It makes it feel heavier, rounder, fuller in your mouth. And it's literally just the thickness of the liquid.
Okay.
If I remember right, you probably want to do like maybe an ounce in a 5 gallon batch. It's not a very big amount.
Oh, it's a very small amount.
Yeah. But this is an option. It's something to consider. And it's another way you can finish if you just need a little adjustment there. The other part of that wine conditioner pack, if I remember right, was basically, it was an oaky kind of tincture that it had a lot of the same character you would get from long aging oak, but you could just pour in a little bit more to get that, the tannin structure and things like that.
See if I can pull up here.
Yeah, the wine conditioner we're pulling up from like Global Vintners and More Beer is a different thing entirely. It's more of this is an invert sugar product, which you would use for back sweetening to bring up the sweetness of the wine. And it, you know, it looks like the same kind of, scroll up a little bit. Super smoother. Reduces aging times. That might be it. Wait, hold on. Go back. Liquid oak plus glycerin.
That it?
That's got to be it.
Yeah. Okay. So a version of it still exists.
Yes. I don't know if Bacchus still carries it. That's not the same brand that I remember seeing at Bacchus, but it's that same idea. You can add some glycerin. You can add some, again, it's an oaky kind of tincture. So you get that, the tannin structure and a little bit of the oaky character to it. It's not like a long aging on oak, but it's kind of in that neighborhood. These are ways you can kind of enhance at the last minute. I would use the glycerin sooner than I would use the liquid oak, but
I will tell you, looking at the instructions on the packaging here, it says use one pack, which is 1 ounce each,
mm-hmm.
or it's half ounce each, actually.
Yeah, net one fluid ounce.
To every 6 gallons, U.S. gallons, of fermented wine prior to bottling.
And that's a valid point, because you generally, when you're making like a wine kit, for whatever reason, wine kits are generally 6 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
Beer kits are generally 5 gallons. And it's never been explained to me how they arrived at, you know, we should do 6 instead of 5 for wine, but it's kind of the baseline.
Okay.
And yet fruit wines, we get the Vintner's Harvest kit things. Kit. It's a jug.
It's a jug.
A concentrate. But that's for 5 gallons.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The consistencies that people have been following for an age and a day, and just, you know, keep going.
But there you go. I mean, but okay, glycerin was something I'd heard about but never bothered learning about until now.
Okay,
so that's at least good information. Yeah. I don't mind it. So what else can we do to finish these things? Okay, we can filter always.
Yes, filtering, like we've talked about before. The other thing we want to probably talk about before you get to filtering though is fining. We talked about Super Clear. There's bentonite. There are a couple other things we can use, like Kiefer salt, chitosan, and then the other one, the one that they use with Guinness from Swim Bladders of Fish. The name is escaping me right now. Isinglass. Isinglass is another one. I don't see that very much at homebrew stores. Usually I see the Kieselsol chitosan combination, which Bacchus is finally carrying those, like, not as part of a kit.
Good.
Because the Super Clear, the thing about fining, you can overdo it with fining, and you're not going to really have a big problem with it, because those agents don't stay dissolved. They all fall down.
Okay.
So they, when you rack off,
it's supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to pour the cake.
Right. Yeah. That's the idea. So if you dose a 2 gallon batch of mead with 5 gallons worth of Kieselsol and chitosan, you're not going to have extra Kieselsol and chitosan sitting in the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're overdoing it. You're wasting money essentially, but it's not going
to. It's not going to hurt anything. So.
But I like to be able to dose myself.
Yeah.
But based on how big the batch is. So the having that option is nice.
Excellent. All right. So what else you got?
Kieselsol, chitosan, the dual fine, or bentonite are the common ones I see.
Yeah. I've used most of those.
Mm-hmm. You can also see stuff like World Flock is apparently pretty popular. I don't know that they still make that, but it was heavily pumped for a very long time, and a lot of people really enjoyed it. All of those are important because that settles out a lot of crap and gets you pretty close to clear all by itself. And generally, that's the only step I do for finding and finishing to get a clear, so to speak, mead. The filtering is kind of an extra step, but if you don't find it and you don't start with something that's already pretty close to clear all by itself, even before you do the so-called rough clearing phase of filtering, you're gonna like jam up your pad fast, and it's going to be a mess that you're not gonna be able to handle.
Yeah, I will say I do a lot of filtering. I mean, I like the crystal clear, colorful bottle. And I have found there are three types of filters I use for what I do. I have the coarse, the medium, and the fine. As a maker of fruited meads, I cannot use the fine. It makes the liquid too thick to effectively go through that filter.
I believe that.
Even if I go coarse, medium, fine, it will not make it through the fine. It will just clog it up immediately.
The thing to understand, and I did not understand this when I was first approaching filtering mead, and again, I will probably never like be a big filter advocate on my part, but filtering for meads is not a process of making it clear. It's a process of polishing that clarity. We're talking about like basically, can you still see through the window? Sure. Is it prettier to look through a window if you take a some furniture polish or some proper
Windex or
polish,
whatever.
right, and a nice soft rag and take your time really buffing it? It will look better.
Yeah. And
Filtering is that extra step, that extra effort to make it look better.
I do that. I mean, have I done it for every batch? No, absolutely not.
Right.
If it's a bottle that I'm never, ever going to leave my house for whatever reason, and I know that,
Yeah.
I won't necessarily filter it. If I'm taking it out of the house for any reason or giving it for gifts or something, I'll polish it because I'm showing off. I'll be honest, I'm just, look, it's pretty.
And there's nothing wrong with showing off. I mean, part of this is a hobby that we appreciate for the camaraderie of it. You and I are talking here basically every weekend in my garage, just sitting drinking mead and chatting about mead.
Yeah.
The
It's
a lot of the mead I make is for when we have, friends over and we're gonna
tough
play some board games or we're gonna have a dinner party or something. And they, hey guys, try this. I made this.
Yeah. Looking at the table here we're working on right now, it's 40% is mine
Yep.
from my closet at home. And that's fine. And we share meads and we enjoy meads and but Jeff's better and more prestigious. He gets boxes and mailings and
I get boxes and mailings because I pay for boxes and mailings on a
yeah, but
quarterly basis.
I'd like to, but I'm cheap. Well, anyway, but yeah, but one thing I did learn before I made my wild plum mead not too earlier this year or earlier last year. Now being in
Excuse me.
the first part of the year, I have to remember last year. In the first part of last year, I made my wild plum mead,
Right.
and this is one I had a huge amount of time with cloudiness. Now I had somebody tell me at one point, "Oh, just double the price and call it cloudy or call it a hazy plum," and I'm sitting here, ha. But the
But just
bottom
to
line
mess it
is,
up a little bit.
but I told John, I said, "It's really cloudy. I can't seem to get the cloudiness out." I was thinking I'm going to have to filter it, but I knew with all that cloudiness, I'm going to go through 20
Oh
filters.
yeah.
It was going to be
If
horrible.
there's any level of cloudiness to it, you're going to jam up filters fast.
And Jeff says, "Well, did you put peptic enzyme in?" I said, "Well, I did. You apparently didn't put enough in. Do it again." I've killed the yeast. I have done everything except back sweetened in bottle at this point. And he goes, "Put peptic enzyme again. Clear it up.
Double dose.
Double dose." And I'm sitting here, "Will that work?" He goes, "Why wouldn't it?" Mind blown. Here I am.
It's not going to hurt anything
And now,
because pectinase does not have a taste. You want to know how I figured this out?
How?
Trial and error. The
Okay.
same thing that you were doing with yours. I forget what batch it was. I had some kind of fruited mead. It would not clear for love or money or God or country.
Or a gun.
Like I did dual fine. I did 5 gallons worth of dual fine in a 1 gallon. This was a 1 gallon glass jug that
Wow.
would not clear. There
Oh,
should have been
God.
plenty of Kesosol and Chittosan in there to get it to at least drop to minimal haze, right? Nothing. I took this sucker, put it in my fridge, and cold crashed it. I put it in a freezer and for like a couple hours to get it extra cold. Nothing. Like nothing would clear this for love or money. And I said, okay, what's causing the haze? It's if it were like a an ionized kind of protein, the Kieselsol or chitosan should have done it. It's got to be small and it's got to be light. Otherwise, cold crash would have probably made it clump up and drop. What else is there?
And he came in, so it was probably pectin.
It could have been pectin. And I was like, okay, well, I already put some pectinase in here. I did the standard, whatever the.
What the packaging said.
Right. And maybe a half a teaspoon, just throwing it out there. That could be right, could be wrong. But I did the base level and went, okay, well, maybe I need more. So I did, okay, take this, another base level, double dosed it, mix it up. There was still probably Kesosol and chitosan in there because it hadn't left me
There was
anything to
plenty.
whack off.
Yeah.
So that might have helped too. And then the next morning it was like, well, very. Not
Clear.
glass clear, but pretty goddamn clear.
Yeah, the
Like,
cake. What do you know?
well, shit.
And that's why, guys, that's why you have somebody to talk to, a mentor, somebody who's been around a little bit more than you do. Talk. I would have pulled my hair out and gone through 20 filters.
You got to share information, guys.
You gotta share the information because, if for Jeff, oh yeah, it was this, try this. I wouldn't have come to that conclusion on a bet. But it works, guys. Now, okay, you got, so we're finished. Anything else you want to finish before we bottle this stuff up?
I think that covers the final finishing steps because we've covered, the conditioning, we've covered the oaking, we've covered like that getting the clarity we want, whether it's filtering or fining or, adding a little pectinase to kind of get it,
You make it a little bit more clear.
just get it to the level of clarity you like, whether that's highly polished or just clear. Or, if you like it cloudy and hazy, this is for you.
Yeah,
Do it.
if you like cloudy hazy for your friends, there's nothing in there that's going to hurt you.
Yeah.
Not a thing. It's all good.
The other thing that I think we can talk about as far as all of this, we've got a few minutes left. We can talk about bottling. We've talked about bottling enclosures before, and there are a few that I advocate for strongly, from a homebrew standpoint. First and foremost, it does not look nice, but like beer bottles and beer caps have the longest shelf life of anything in the world because those little oxygen permeable, or sorry, the oxygen impermeable plastic inserts in the inside of those bottle caps have been engineered for shelf stability.
For years, I mean,
Decades.
years and decades of
Right.
self-stability. I mean, was what I mean, years and years and years and years ago, you told me they've checked bottle capping bottles 25 years later and it was still
Yeah,
sealed.
20, 25 years is standard for those. As far as the corks you find in most homebrew stores, bear in mind, you're not getting the premium level cork, even if you're paying extra premium prices in a lot of these cases, because cork is a limited resource.
Yeah, and the guys that have the professional wine houses are getting the really good ones first. That's their
And
market.
yeah, the companies that make the cork know who they're selling to. You're getting, when you're buying whole cork at your homebrew store, you're probably getting second or third runnings. It's going to be looser. The wood in the cork is going to be, open pore. It's not going to be as like dense, and so it has an increase in oxygen permeability to it.
Good news is there is a number system. A number 8 cork is more permeable than a number 9 cork. You can adjust slightly. A number 9 is going to give you maybe an extra year.
The other thing to think about is don't use cork or don't use just straight cork. I am a big advocate for what they call agglomerated cork because what they'll do is it looks like particle board, but when they're making the corks, they're doing the punch to make the cork to fit bottles. They'll take all the little ends and scrap pieces and basically put them in a food processor and then use pressure and heat to compact them into agglomerated corks. And those tend to last longer than the cheaper whole cork you find in a lot of homebrew stores. And the order of those are shelf stable in the 2 to 5, maybe even 7 year range, if I remember right. I haven't looked at this in an age and a day. So
Oh, and
I've
another,
used those for quite a while.
yeah, and another one that Jeff turned me onto a long time ago was the nylon corks.
Yeah, Nomacork is the brand name, and those have gotten just as cheap as my agglomerated corks have lately. At least at Bacchus they have been.
Yeah,
And
and
so,
those are synthetic, man.
right, they are basically not oxygen permeable. They're Nomacork as a brand are really pushing for that, the level of shelf stability that you get from bottle caps.
Yeah,
They're trying.
they're trying,
I
but
don't know. I don't know if they've been long enough to have the long-term like studies
testing.
done to prove it, but they're really trying. They're also doing interesting stuff with like trying to get more options for like zero impact waste or recycled products and things like that are more environmentally
Stable and
right.
sustainable.
Yeah, sustainable or responsible, I guess was the course I was going to take with that. But yeah, I like the direction they go with this company, trying to do a better product and a more responsible product.
Now, I'll be honest, I generally use number 9 corks on almost everything. I'll use conglomerated when I can get them. And I don't know why, but sometimes when I go to Bacchus, they're out. But I may have gone after Jeff, so who knows? By the same token, nylon corks, when we had an opportunity, Jeff and I had an opportunity to get corks in a bulk, and they had a grab bag of corks. And this is a whole bunch of corks. You want to buy them for this much? Jeff put the money down initially. I paid him back, and he took the synthetic, and that was cool because he did the work. I mean, I didn't begrudge him. I got good corks, and they worked. But are you going to keep this for 25 years? Are you going to keep this for a year? Work with you what you're doing, work with your budget, guys. If I want, I mean, I've heard legends, many of them, of the ultimate apple pie mead. Apple pie mead or something like that. Some legendary mead that they actually let it age for 20 plus years. And I'm sitting here, that sounds lovely. I'm unwilling to wait 20 years for my mead. I mean, if you say, I'm going to share this with you, and it's a 20-year aged apple pie mead, I'm in. Am I ever going to make it? No.
You know, I've heard from people after our Polish mead recipe about, oh yeah, no, I made a Polish style mead and I aged it for 2 or 3 years.
How?
That is more than I would give myself credit for to be able to just hold off on, you know? Like 3 to 6 months, I'm generally considering that good to drink, and I will drink it, and I will consume it, and it will be done.
That clink you just heard was the last of that bot of this blackberry mead.
We will see if this apple Polish style makes it to a year.
Yeah.
I will say I will try and make that last a year.
Yeah.
Well, before I do the bottling and finishing and all that.
And actually, this coming month, because we promised a guy we met at the last Valkyrie Horn,
That's right.
his name is Tanner. Now, Tanner, I'm actually going to reach out to you on social media and say it's coming. He gave us a bottle of his award-winning Earl Grey Mead.
And he told us not to open it for a year.
He told us not over a year. This February is a year.
If not, end of January.
I'll check. I'll
Yeah,
check.
we need to grab that bottle off the shelf and see what the actual bottling date is. But he said, if I remember right, he said, don't drink this until it's been bottled for a year.
Yeah.
And he has the bottled on date on
Yeah. So we're going to take a look at that. And Tanner, this one's for you. We kept our word. Mind you, it wasn't easy because I've seen it sitting on the shelf here for a piece of time. I love you and your wife. You're great people. But we're going to do an actual bottle-aged 1 year mead that we were given by an award-winning mead maker.
So there you
So. Guys, it's been a pleasure having you with us again. We're hoping that you'll come back again and join us on the porch, having a great time with mead and conversation. Jeff, nice being here.
Chris, thank you for coming. See you guys next time.
Happy moving.